this.
Susu mentioned, I'm going to start a series, a class series on the Satipatthana Sutra. And I'm going to start with a confession. So I volunteered to do this, and part of the reason was that I've actually done a class on the Satipatthana Sutra when I was Shuso, which was in 2011. And so I thought, well, you know, I've been through it. I've got my notes from before. I can just reuse them, maybe add a bit, and how hard is this going to be? And then I started looking at it again this time, and to my surprise and actually delight, I've found that the sutra, there's a lot more to it than I remember, and my understanding of it is different, my questions about it are different, and it's been really quite interesting. So I'm not actually going to plagiarize my notes from before.
Excuse me, just one small question. Would you mind, it's your choice, if we turned off the fan so that we can hear you a little easier?
Yeah.
Would that be all right?
Yeah. Fine with you. Any objections?
I'm slightly uncomfortable.
Oh, okay. Well, then just leave it on. Yeah. Yeah. I'll try to speak a bit louder. So I'm going to use, there's many translations of this sutra. I'm using one by Thich Nhat Hanh. It's a book called Transformation and Healing. And it's one of the earliest recorded teachings of the Buddha. And it's included in a group of teachings called the Pali Canon. And these were initially passed down orally and first recorded in writing on palm leaves about 450 years after the death of Gautama Buddha. And it's one of the primary teachings on mindfulness. So mindfulness is the ability to keep something in mind. And this sutra focuses on remembering to stay alert to what you're doing in the present moment, and remembering to recognize the skillful and unskillful qualities that arise in the mind that get in the way of concentration. So mindfulness is always mindfulness of something, attention on something. And the Buddha teaches here that there are four areas where mindfulness has to penetrate in order for healing and wisdom to occur. Satipatthana is often translated as the Sutra on the Four Establishments of Mindfulness, or the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And sati means mindfulness or remembering, and upatthana means place of abiding or establishment. And it's also sometimes translated as the way of establishing mindfulness, so the way of doing that, rather than the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And this shifts the emphasis to the process of awareness itself rather than to the particular objects of our attention. And these are both covered in detail in the sutra, what to pay attention to and how to do it. So the sutra presents really a basic formula for establishing mindfulness, describing four frames of reference for anchoring attention in the present moment. And these four areas or foundations are the body, feelings, mind, and objects of mind. And these, this might ring a bell for you, as they're very similar to what we chant regularly in the Heart Sutra, albeit with a no in front of them. No form, no sensation, no perception, no formation, no consciousness. So bodies, form, feelings, sensation, perception, formation, consciousness, is like mind and objects of mind. And we'll spend the next four Wednesdays exploring the teachings in this sutra, tonight beginning with instructions on developing mindfulness of the body. So this is the first foundation, and although not necessarily the most important, it's without it, it's difficult to proceed to mindfulness of the more subtle areas. So I'm going to read from the sutra. And the first paragraph is, as usual in most sutras, sets the scene. So it begins, "I heard these words of the Buddha one time when he was living at Kamasadharma, a market town of the Kuru people. The Buddha addressed the bhikkhus," bhikkhus are monks, "O bhikkhus," and the bhikkhus replied, "Venerable Lord, So this is how most sutras begin. We know where it happened, where the talk happened, and who was there. And then the Buddha goes on by describing the importance and the supremacy of mindfulness practice. The Buddha said, "Bhikkhus, there is a most wonderful way to help living beings realize purification, overcome directly grief and sorrow, end pain and anxiety, travel the right path, and realize nirvana. This way is the four establishments of mindfulness." That sounds pretty good. And it's interesting to me that in our evolution as humans, we're at a place in time right now where mindfulness is becoming a mainstream word and practice. It's employed in many workplaces and everyday situations. It is evidence-based, and it's studied scientifically, and it's taught in schools, both elementary and post-secondary. And I've sort of been wondering if this perhaps reflects the penetration or permeation of our joint evolving consciousness, you know, from the centuries of ongoing practice done by our Buddhist ancestors and by other forms of spiritual practice that employ mindfulness. I have an interesting anecdote from my own family life about how pervasive mindfulness is, but how it's not necessarily embraced by everybody. I have two daughters, and they grew up with parents who both meditated regularly, and as parents, we, you know, really encouraged that. We were hoping that this would sort of rub off on them, and they would have the same values and practices that we did. So we thought to introduce gently a mindfulness practice at home. So we started with 5 minutes once a week, which seemed pretty reasonable. They were quite young, 5 and 8. There was a complete rebellion. it was not appreciated. It was boring. It was stupid. So we tried a few times, but basically let it go, thinking, well, we're not going to force our, you know, beliefs and practices on our children, but they'd, you know, be surrounded by it, and it would perhaps come into their lives later. So they're young adults now, and so one of them was in treatment for addiction, and one of the really valuable modalities that are used there is mindfulness. No, didn't choose to do that. Not for me. And then the other one went to medical school, and mindfulness is really a very much accepted and studied valuable practice in health and healing. I mean, it's been shown that it can be helpful for things like high blood pressure, heart disease, stress, anxiety, pain management. So I thought, oh, this is great. She's going to hear it from, you know, scientifically studied, and from people she respects perhaps more than her parents. So I kind of waited enthusiastically to hear how this went. And after the seminar on mindfulness, her comment was, "Well, that was the biggest waste of time of anything we've done so far." So, anyway, mindfulness is with us to stay, and people enjoy it or employ it in however way they will. So this, the beginning of the sutra is talking about just how important mindfulness is, and all those things that were described about the way it can help, you know, purification, overcome grief and sorrow, end pain and anxiety, travel the right path, realize nirvana, just from being mindful. And so the next in the sutra is a definition of the four satipatthanas, or foundations. And as is usual, it begins with a rhetorical question. What are the four establishments? 1, bhikkhus, a practitioner remains established in the observation of the body in the body, diligent, with clear understanding, mindful, having abandoned every craving and every distaste for this life. 2, he remains established in the observation of the feelings in the feelings, diligent, with clear understanding, mindful, having abandoned every craving and every distaste for this life. 3, she remains established in the observation of the mind in the mind, diligent, with clear understanding, mindful, having abandoned every craving and every distaste for this life. And 4, he remains established in the observation of the objects of mind in the objects of mind, diligent, with clear understanding, mindful, having abandoned every craving and every distaste for this life. Sounds easy. So, and it's interesting to note that the definition given here starts with the mental qualities that are to be cultivated in the practice while we are being mindful. So it's diligent, clearly knowing, mindful, and free from desires and discontent. So this is the headspace we are to cultivate while practicing mindfulness. And it's also really interesting that he says to be mindful of the body in the body. And like, why not just say the body? And some of the translations I read did leave that out. They just said mindful of the body. But I think this is probably more accurate and interesting. It's a little bit puzzling. Like, what does that mean to be mindful of the body in the body? And I think it refers to looking deeply into the body, not just observing from outside, and to examine the sensations and the experience of being embodied as perceived by the senses without taking it to be me or my body. And Thich Nhat Hanh describes this as bringing mindfulness into your body. Mindfulness becomes the body. It's not an outside observer. And there's not a clear distinction between the observer and the object. And this is something quantum scientists have found as well, that this is so simply observing an experiment influences the outcome. So we can't be separate or apart from what we are observing. So there's the four foundations, four satipatthanas. And for each of them, there are a series of meditative practices given to teach how to practice mindfulness right here, like of that particular area in the body, the feelings, the mind, and the objects of mind. And in the sutra, there's 21 meditations. And we won't delve into all of them, but in the next weeks, I'll pick some out that give a sense of the structure of the sutra. In the first foundation, the mindfulness of the body, there are six meditations given. And they focus one at a time on breathing, posture, movement, repulsive features of the body, which is kind of interesting, and elements that make up the body, and then dissolution of the body. So in the sutra, the scene has been set, the supreme importance and power of mindfulness proclaimed, and the four establishments defined. And next come specific instructions on what to be mindful of and how to do it. And so always again, beginning with the rhetorical question. And how does a practitioner remain established in the observation of the body in the body? He goes to the forest, to the root of a tree, or to an empty room, sits down cross-legged in the lotus position, holds his body straight, and establishes mindfulness in front of him. That's an interesting one too. Establishes mindfulness in front of him. She breathes in, aware that she is breathing in. She breathes out, aware that she is breathing out. When she breathes in a long breath, she knows, I am breathing in a long breath. When she breathes out a long breath, she knows, I am breathing out a long breath. When he breathes in a short breath, he knows, I am breathing in a short breath. When he breathes out a short breath, he knows, I am breathing out a short breath. He uses the following practice. Breathing in, I am aware of my whole body. Breathing out, I am aware of my whole body. And then, breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I calm my body. And just an interesting little anecdote that's added here to kind of further illustrate the practices. It says, just as a skilled turner knows when he makes a long turn, I am making a long turn, and knows when he makes a short turn, I am making a short turn. So a practitioner, when he breathes in a long breath, knows, I am breathing in a long breath, and when he breathes in a short breath, knows, I am breathing in a short breath. When he breathes out a long breath, knows, I am breathing out a long breath. And when he breathes out a short breath, knows, I am breathing out a short breath. So lots of repetition, what sounds quite simple, but also kind of noting. It's like being aware of it and noting what you're doing. This is one of the core sutras for the Theravadin tradition, for the Vipassana meditation. They use a lot of noting, and so that's, I think, a practice that's described here quite a bit. So many Buddhist scriptures and teachings employ repetition as a style of teaching. We've already noticed that. And in this sutra, there is a refrain. It's kind of called a refrain that occurs 13 different times. And it's not a super long sutra, so 13 times. And it follows each of the specific meditation instructions relating to the four foundations of mindfulness. So after this particular meditation, which begins with mindfulness of breathing, we get the first refrain. It goes like this. This is how a practitioner observes the body in the body. He observes the body from within or from without, or from both within and without. He observes the process of coming to be in the body, or the process of dissolution in the body, or both the process of coming to be and the process of dissolution. Or he is mindful of the fact, there is a body here, until understanding and full awareness come about. He maintains the observation, free, not caught up in any worldly consideration. That is how to practice observation of the body in the body, O bhikkhus. So there's actually a lot to contemplate in this refrain, and for someone like me, the repetition, although I can easily get annoyed by it, is helpful. So the phrases sound simple, but with repetition, their subtle meaning becomes clearer and sinks in deeper. So let's break these down a little bit. So it begins, she observes the body from within or from without, or from both within and without. So this distinction of internal and external, it's been the subject of study and controversy amongst Buddhist scholars. And early interpretations felt that the awareness from within means what we feel inside our bodies, and from without is awareness of other bodies around us. And more modern scholars have felt that internal refers to sensations within the body, and external refers to sensations more at skin level. Some have said that it reflects the difference between apparent and ultimate truth. And so awareness applied only internally can lead to self-centeredness, and applied both internally and externally can be more objective and detached. So it's not like not my body or not your body, not me and not you. I'm just going to read a bit from Joseph Goldstein, who's a really brilliant and well-known Vipassana teacher, and his writing on this sutra about the internal and external. And he says, contemplating the body internally seems obvious. It is mostly how we practice. It is the present moment awareness of what arises in the body. It might be the sensations of the breath or of different sensations arising throughout the body, such as heat or cold, tightness or pressure. But what does contemplating the body externally mean? There are some interesting aspects here that meditation practitioners don't often make explicit. Contemplating the body externally can mean being mindful of the bodily actions of others when they draw our attention. Instead of our usual tendency to judge or react when we see other people doing something, we can rest in the simple mindfulness of what the other person is doing. We can be mindful that they are walking or eating without getting lost in our own thoughts of how fast or slow, mindful or careless they might be. And although attending to the breath is mostly internal, the instruction to be mindful of the body externally could be particularly helpful on retreat when someone else's breath may be loud and disturbing. I think we might have all noticed that at various times. And at those times, being mindful of another's breath, whether it is in or out, long or short, can actually be part of our own path to awakening. Being mindful of the body externally has another advantage. Have you noticed that when you're mindful of someone else moving very carefully without distraction, that you yourself become more concentrated? This is one reason the Buddha suggested that we associate with those who are mindful and concentrated. It's contagious. In this way, our own practice becomes a real offering to our fellow practitioners. So that's some interesting thoughts about that distinction between inside the body and outside the body. So the next line in the refrain is, he observes the process of coming to be in the body, or the process of dissolution of the body, or both the process of coming to be and the process of dissolution. So this is a reminder of one of the most fundamental teachings of Buddhism, the fact of impermanence, arising and passing away. So these first two instructions really bring awareness to the qualities of space and time. Space inside, outside, time passing away. And the next line, or he is mindful of the fact there is a body here. I like that phrase of mindfulness, there is a body here, until understanding and full awareness come about. So this is like mindfulness of the body is established, free of thoughts or judgments or prejudice, not thinking about what a body is, just observing it. There is a body here. And in another translation by Anileo, it goes, mindfulness that there is a body is established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. And the next line in the refrain is, he maintains the observation, free, not caught up in any worldly consideration. That is how to practice observation of the body in the body, O bhikkhus. And so I'm just going to, the summary that Joseph Goldstein made about that refrain, I thought was really well written. It goes, through the repetition of the refrain, the Buddha reminds us again and again of the essential aspects of the practice. Contemplating our experience internally, externally, and both. Contemplating the nature of impermanence, the arising, the passing away, and both the arising and passing away in regard to our experience. Establishing enough mindfulness to recognize simply what is unfolding moment to moment, without mental commentary, and to remain mindful of what's happening, and abiding without clinging to anything that enters our realm of experience. So there's a lot in that condensed refrain that's repeated over and over. And just do another part of the meditation on mindfulness of the body, which follows here after that first refrain. So moreover, when a practitioner walks, he is aware, I am walking. When he is standing, he is aware, I am standing. When he is sitting, he is aware, I am sitting. When she is lying down, she is aware, I am lying down. In whatever position the body happens to be, she is aware of the positions of her body. So we've gone from awareness of breathing in the body to now posture. And again, we got the refrain. This is how a practitioner observes the body in the body. She observes the body from within or from without, or from both within and without. She observes the process of coming to be in the body, or the process of dissolution in the body, or both the process of coming to be and the process of dissolution. Or she is mindful of the fact there is a body here, until understanding and full awareness come about. She maintains the observation free, not caught up in any worldly consideration. That is how to practice observation of the body in the body, O bhikkhus. And then from posture, it's mindfulness of movement and position. Moreover, when the practitioner is going forward or backward, he applies full awareness to his going forward or backward. when he looks in front or looks behind, bends down or stands up, he also applies full awareness to what he is doing. He applies full awareness to wearing the Sangati robe or carrying the alms bowl. When she eats or drinks, chews or savors food, she applies full awareness to all this. When passing excrement or urinating, she applies full awareness to this. When she walks, stands, lies down, sits, sleeps, or wakes up, speaks or is silent, she shines her awareness on all this. So those are the first two meditations on the first foundation, which is awareness, mindfulness of the body. So I'm going to invite us now to do a kind of a practical meditation and employ these a little bit. So I'm just going to invite you now to stand up. And then just orient as if we're going to be doing kinhin. So we'll be just standing and then moving slowly. And for those at home on Zoom, like just to stand in your place, in your room. And so first of all, or standing or sitting, just be in your position and bring attention to your body and establish mindfulness in front of yourself. Breathe in and out, noticing whether it is a long inhale or a short inhale and exhale. Then breathe in, experiencing your whole body. And as you breathe, use your breath to calm your body. And next, begin to walk slowly and notice the change in position of your limbs. And you can have your hands in Shusho or just at your side as you would just regularly walking, whatever's comfortable, or just in sitting position. And just notice the change in position of your limbs. Feel the changing weight in your feet as you move from one to the other. Feel how your trunk adapts and your arms move if they're moving. Notice your spine. And do this being aware of the body from within. shift your awareness a bit and do this being aware of the body from without. This may mean witnessing your body as if you were an outside observer, or it may mean being aware of all the bodies in the room. Now be aware or mindful of the body, both from within and from without. To just then walk back to your spot.
Being all the same pattern around.
Yeah, like being mindful of your body and the body. And just before you sit, we're now going to divide into just groups of three, so you can do that. Get with a group of three around you. I think that's about right. So you can just pull your cushions so that you'll be able to face your group, and we'll do just a little. And Sasha, I think, will you be able to do the breakout groups for the people on Zoom that are staying? Kate was here.
Yeah, Kate has. I thought I found the 15 in the room. But is she
Or in a group of four? So
yeah, group of four.
It's okay.
Sure.
Out.